And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to Dose of Leadership. Welcome to the first episode of 2020. So excited to kick off the brand new decade and entering our seventh year at Dose of Leadership, which is just amazing to me that it's been that long. It's gone by so fast, and it's really a blessing. It's one of my favorite things to do, and I get to talk to so many guests. I feel like I've received a PhD in life, leadership, and so much wisdom out there, and I can't think of a better guest to kick off 2020. He certainly lives up to all those expectations. Such a fun conversation. I feel so blessed to have met Tom Triumph. I love that last name. It's so fitting to what he believes, what he stands for, what he likes to educate people on. He is a speaker, a consultant, and an author who helps companies grow by working with them, innovate their business and product development. He's helped many organizations, large and small. He helps them act nimbly, helps small companies scale. He's been a participant in two global technology revolutions. He's been part of some remarkable success stories and some misfires as well. He's lived aboard an ocean research ship and tended to the mini sub where Cousteau was on board, which is pretty cool. He wrestled in the Olympic trials, and he's helped oversee the redesign and fabrication of the largest composite hovercraft ever built in the U.S. He's got a lot of life stink on him, a lot of life experiences. He talks a lot about it in his brand new book, Evolve or Die, Lessons for World-Class Innovation and Creativity, which I just absolutely love this book. It's one of those books you can pull off the shelf, turn anywhere in the book, and it's chock full of stories, chock full of wisdom. He's one of those guys that believes we were all destined for great things and that we're all born these creative geniuses, and it's all of it's inside of us. You've heard me talk about this on the show many times, that it's not about trying to become a better leader or a better anything. It's about releasing what's already inside of you, and Tom believes that wholeheartedly. And we talk a lot about life, leadership, some of the lessons, so many great stories. He's got a great TED Talk out there, one of the best TED Talks out there. I'll have a link to it on the post. You can catch it at Dose of Leadership. And he's a big giver. I've never had anybody on the show do this, and this is so special, so unique. And I just think it's a great way to kick off 2020, as I'm so excited for where Dose of Leadership is going this year. So many great guests coming down the pike. And Tom is so generous. And I'm going to repeat this a couple times in here, and it'll be in the show notes on doseofleadership.com on Tom's episode. But if you can write this down, grab a pen, and any listener out there, you can instantly receive his 52-page, 4-color ebook called The Call to Innovate. All you got to do is text EVOLVE, that's EVOLVE, EVOLVE, to 444-999. So that's text EVOLVE to 444-999. This is a $10 book on Amazon, and you'll get it for free. You can also get an additional bonus if you text EVOLVE. You'll also automatically receive, I'm not even going to name the book, but this is my favorite author. You've heard me talk about it many times on the show. One of my favorite authors, he was a Marine, gives you a hint. He's got some of the best books out there. I give it to all my coaching clients, the first, not this book that he's given, but this author. I use his book for all my coaching clients when I start out with him. He's going to give this book in addition to you as well. If you text EVOLVE to 444-999, he's going to mail this book to you. And so two great gifts from such a generous guy. Such a generous thought leader. He's one of the great ones out there, and I'm really excited to have this conversation, or have you listen to this conversation. One of the great ones out there, Tom Triumph. So exciting. This show is sponsored, again, by my sponsor, Equity Bank. So thrilled to have them part of this show. They've been with me for a year and a half now. We're still going strong, heading to their leadership conference here in a couple weeks to help MC their annual leadership conference up in Kansas City. Equity Bank is just one of those organizations that understands what it means to start and grow a business. They're one of the unique financial institutions out there. It's been exciting to watch them grow in my hometown. They've grown into one of the fastest growing banks in the Midwest. They're listed on the NASDAQ exchange. They have locations all across Kansas, as well as Oklahoma, Missouri, and Arkansas. Clearly, I truly believe that this team at Equity Bank knows how to lead for growth. So if it feels like your current bank is more of a follower than a leader, then check out my friends at equitybank.com. You're going to want to work with them. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for all your support. Here's to a great 2020 for all of you out there. Now let's join our conversation with the one and only Tom Triumph here on Dose of Leadership. Well, good morning, Tom Triumph. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Richard.
You know, is your last name really Triumph? Is that real?
Yes, that is that's my real name. My grandparents immigrated from Italy, and it used to be Triumfo, but the O was cut off during.
Oh man, what a shame!
The
Triumfo. I would love to call you that.
Yeah,
the mighty. What a perfect name! The reason why I'm giving you the business about that, because what a perfect name for this book. As I'm reading your book and the stuff that you talk about, I mean, Triumph is like you're destined to talk about the things you talk about. Have you ever thought about that?
No, I've not thought about that. I think, I mean, I don't know that it's any better than anybody else's last name.
Well,
it's whatever you make your name to be. I mean, you know, it could be good or bad.
Well, great answer from the humility is great and indicative of a great and humble leader that you are. But I mean, the stuff that you're talking about in getting people to, you know, tap into their creativity, to their the innovative side of their brains. I got to tell you, we talked a little bit about this in the pre-recording, is I never really saw myself as someone who was creative or innovative. That limiting belief, I guess, kind of kept me away from it. Doing this show, you know, and I'm just turned 51. And so in the last 8 to 10 years, I've started to see that I have a lot more creative potential than I gave myself credit for. For the most of my life, I was talking myself out of it. Do you find that normal in people?
Yeah, I mean, here's how I think about it, right? There's a quote from Bill Bowerman, right, the famous coach and a co-founder of Nike, and he said, "If you have a body, you are an athlete," and I really believe that. And other people have said similar things. There's a famous runner and a medical doctor, George Sheehan, who said, "Everyone with a body is a runner," right? So I think it's the same thing. I mean, if you are a human, you are creative, and you have the capacity that can be used, it can be developed, and can be increased, right? But everybody is born a creative genius, and actually, we can talk about it a little bit later. There's a study that shows that. I talk about it in the TEDx talk, and I can summarize it very quickly for you here. When NASA was getting started, when NASA was ramping up, they wanted to identify their most creative employees in their organization. And you would imagine that NASA, to begin with, has a lot of very bright people. Well, they hired a consultant to come in and actually put together a test. His name is George Land. And George Land put together a simple assessment to measure someone's creativity, and they applied it to all their employees within NASA, not just their engineers, but their scientists and even their administrative people and project managers and whatnot. And they found that approximately 2% of their employees scored at the creative genius level. And it worked out great, right?
Yeah.
NASA, once identified, NASA used these folks and put them in positions of where their creativity could be applied, and it helped us land on the moon and return safely back to Earth just 7 years after getting started.
Yeah.
Then quick cut to the end. Decades later, George Land, he's been retired, and he's invited to visit his granddaughter's kindergarten class just to come meet with the kids. And he decides, really on a whim, to bring the same assessment used at NASA just for fun and have the kids take the test. 5-year-old kids. He was shocked to find that 98% scored at the creative genius level.
Oh, my Lord.
He goes back 5 years later when the kids were 10, same group of kids, had him take it, 30% scored. He went back 5 years later when the kids were 15, same kids, 12%. And he joked. He goes, "Yeah, we stopped testing at 15 years of age because the results were so depressing."
Right.
Yeah, and it's been repeated many times by others, always with the same results. So believe me, you are, whether you believe it or not, you were born a creative genius. At least 98% of us were. And you're doing yourself a disservice, and anyone's doing themselves a disservice to simply say, yeah, I'm not a creative person. You know,
that is an amazing story, but it is depressing. And you think back, how much is getting lost and why is it getting lost? Right. I mean, I think intuitively we can see why it gets stymied, but why do you think it, I mean, what, how do we prevent that? How do we stop that? Or how do we reinvigorate?
It's very understandable, right? Because we all get caught up, right? Like they say, in the thick of thin things, right? We get caught up. Right. We get caught up, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody. We just get very, very busy, and our lives get filled with just trying to keep the wheels on things, and it's hard to find the time to be creative. I recently gave a TEDx talk up in Cape May, New Jersey. And it's up, folks can watch it. And I actually talk about this exact story for just a few minutes about NASA and George Land. But the interesting part is George Land went on to describe that anyone can regain their creative genius, and you can do it readily and you can do it quickly. And very quickly, there's basically three things that we could all practice, even right now in our busy lives. Right. The first one is to generate an abundance of ideas.
Yeah.
Okay. The second thing is to withhold criticism.
Mm.
And the third thing is exercise every day your creativity. And those three things can really help get us back on the path to regaining our creative capacity.
I like the criticism piece. I think, you know, and it's one of those, it's almost like eating chocolate donut or pizza. Criticism is like that sugar high that makes you feel like you're accomplishing something, right? But they're empty calories, and it actually leads to a dark path, right? I've always believed that, yet I still find myself going down that rabbit hole, particularly in this environment, right? The internet age, it's easy to fall into that trap.
It seems like things. It seems like people have become as critical as they've ever been. And I don't think that's serving anybody very well. I mean, there's such a thing as constructive criticism, right? Which we all should be open to, which is trying to objectively understand where we can make improvements, right?
Right.
And that's fine. And then there's just criticism that originates from anger and angst and frustration that's really intended to degrade the person, and that's not good, because that doesn't help anybody.
You know, I had a great mentor. She since passed away. She was actually an acting coach here in town, but she would help me with my public speaking and even generating some of my business. A very innovative, very creative person, very passionate about life. And I remember we were getting ready to, she was with me as I was giving one of my keynotes. And after it was over, it went really well. I mean, and she helped me through a lot of on an improvement side, and it went really right. Well. And, you know, after the speech and people coming up and saying, hey, really great speech, I love it, which is always great, right? You're basking in the warmth of your success or whatever. And yeah. One guy comes up and says the same thing. He said, hey, you know, great speech. He goes, but here's some pointers I'd like to give to you. And he went about and he gave them. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'm sitting there thinking, no, this is, you know, constructive criticism, isn't that? And my teacher, after it was over, she was like, you know, F that guy, you know, and don't. And I'm like, what? Really? But it's just to make me better. She's like, no, there's a difference, right? And anybody that comes up would give you unsolicited advice. That was her big pet peeve as an artist, as a creative, is like, that's only going to make you focus on your weakness. She goes, I want you to focus on your strengths. You knocked this out of the park. That guy was doing that because he didn't feel good about himself. And I thought that was a great lesson from her. What do you think about when you hear me say that story?
Well, I think that could be true. She might have a point, but on the other hand, he might have had some great insights that you felt were very helpful and would help you give a better talk next time, right? And in the end, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, yeah. F you to the guy. I mean, it would be like, okay. I mean,
take, yeah, take, I wouldn't take, say F. Right.
Well, I don't mean that literally, I just didn't even think that. Here's what I would think. I'd say, great, thanks. And then it's up to you to take what you can that is going to help you deliver a more impactful, meaningful, relevant talk, right? And if there are things from what he told you that apply, great, use it. If there's not, that's fine. I mean, then.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I know what you're saying. I guess it's what she was trying to get me to avoid was kind of like the, I remember hearing a story about, who's the guy that helped create Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm guy?
Yeah, Larry David.
Larry David. And that famous story that he had, he was getting acknowledged at a New York Yankees game, the seventh inning stretch or whatever, acknowledged. And, of course, he's a big New York guy and a Yankees fan. And the crowd's just going nuts. And he gets this little award at the seventh inning stretch. And then he's walking out and he goes, as he's walking through the tunnel, one guy yells over, "You suck, Larry David," and that's all right. He thought. It ruined his whole night. And that's all he thought about, right? And so just getting glomming on that one little piece of criticism, I guess, and
that's
not
funny.
Let it ruin you.
Oh, yeah, and other than that, he probably said, other than that, it was pretty, pretty.
Right. Yeah, what a great show.
Hey, look, there's always going to be haters, right?
It's sure.
The common vernacular. And whatever. I mean, just, you do you, right? You do yourself and, work hard, be humble, do good work, keep learning. And I'm not sure if the criticism really matters that much.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's kind of like, that's what I like in your book when you talk about that short little chapter about rules for creating your future from a rock star. I'm a big Steve Vai fan, and you had the list from Steve Vai, right? And he talks about not so much the criticism, but he does talk about the focus on your strengths piece. And I'm a huge believer of that. I've seen that work in real time, in real life, both when I was when I'm accountable for people, but even for myself. My life really started to turn around when I started doing that. When I'm aware of my weaknesses, but to me, I do the 80-20 Pareto rule, right? I spend 80% of my time on my strengths and 20% of my time on my weaknesses. I don't ignore them necessarily, but I don't try to spend all my energy trying to fix a weakness that, in the grand scheme of things, is really not going to move the needle all that much, even if I did improve, right? And so that's why I love the Steve Vai list, focus on your strengths. Don't worry about what you might be missing.
Yeah. 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 Right. Well, and the one thing you get, I mean, just as a quick mention of the book, right, to sort of tie it in, I think there's something like 60 little chapters, and it's not just about engineers and scientists, but there's plenty of stuff on artists and architects.
Oh, no, it's a great book.
And a lot of women, that have transformed our world as well as men. But there's some common threads that kind of run through it, right? And one of them is that people do the work, right? People put the time in to do the work to find and follow their passion. And it's not easy, right? Everybody who has succeeded has had to put the time in and grind away and continue despite a lot of difficulty and criticism, like we talked about earlier. And the case in point was Steve Vai, a dozen hours a day, oftentimes for years practicing the guitar. Right. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think in a theme I've talked about on this show for the past 7 years that has really kind of emerged when you talk about pursuing significance and what significance means, it's subjective. It's kind of like success. But I like the word significance over success, because success isn't as meaningful, I think, as significance. And what does a significant life look like? And it is, to me, significance is pursuing the things you talk about in the book, the thing you talk about in your TEDx talk, is tapping into that. In believing that you are born a creative genius and tapping into that creative side, because the reality is we all want to know that we were here and that we mattered, and we all want to do something significant, right?
And not to cut you off, but we all do matter, and it's not because of position.
Right.
And it's not because of title. We all impact people that we come in contact with every day. I mean, I've had people, and we'll go back to the example you gave Larry David. There's a stadium of, I don't know what it holds, 60 some thousand people, right? And probably 99% of them are all very positive. And there's one person who yells out something, you know, hurtful and negative, and it has a big impact on someone. So you never know how your interaction with another person is going to impact them. But you know, if it's positive, it can only do good things. If it's negative, it can only do negative things.
That's a great point. I mean, I think to realize the power of influence and how much you're influencing people, whether you're trying or not. And so think of the impact you can have if you are very intentional about it, right? Because, I mean, I've had friends, and I've even gone up to old school teachers. You know, I'm friends with one of my, still friends with one of a very impactful teacher of mine in high school, and he just retired. And we were talking about this one time, and he says, man, you know, he taught for 30 plus years. And he said, I've had, can't tell you how many people have come up to me and said, man, I remember that time you sat me down and talked to me about this and that and said this, and you believed in me. And the kid will walk away, or the person will walk away, and he's like, I don't remember who that was. And
sure.
I don't remember having that conversation. I've done that with my right. kids, where my kids have come and said, remember that time we were sitting there and baking cookies and you told me this? And I'm kind of nodding my head and I don't remember. But for whatever reason, it was important to them, right? And it was significant for them. So that's the power of what you're talking about, the influence. And man, it's almost kind of scary. It's almost like having a superpower.
It's a superpower. And it goes the other way.
Yeah, it certainly can.
You can say something to someone that is, you know, just mean and spiteful. And you can say it in passing to someone you don't even know that cuts you off. And it can do a lot of harm to someone because you don't know what's going on in someone's life. And it's very important to set yourself to always making, you know, positive contributions to people, because it all lands somewhere. You're either inflicting a small cut or you're applying a Band-Aid or
right.
something. You know? So,
right.
don't be the person out there putting more negativity in the world. It all has an impact.
Hey, we're about halfway through the conversation, but I wanted to take the time to talk about my good friends, the sponsor here of this special series at Equity Bank. Have you ever noticed that most business bankers seem to really understand just one thing? It's banking, right? And not a lot about business. It makes sense, since most banks were built generations ago and now they're often run by caretakers, not business builders. Well, it's not the case here at Equity Bank. The bankers at Equity Bank didn't inherit a bank generations ago. They built one of their own. They know that building something takes expertise, vision, and hard work. And over the past decade, they've built one of the region's fastest growing banks by working side by side with customers, with entrepreneurs, with leaders in communities all throughout Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. Recently, Equity Bank was listed on the NASDAQ exchange, which gives them even greater capabilities to take on those big deals that growing businesses need to keep on growing. So if you're tired of talking to bankers who've never really ran or owned or built a business, then I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised when you talk to my friends at Equity Bank. Thanks for listening to this show. Let's get back to the conversation, this unique and special series on leadership and entrepreneurship brought to you by my friends at Equity Bank. I'm curious about how why do you do this? how did you fall into this? And first of all, what do you think your purpose is? And why the book? Why the talks? Why are you so passionate about this?
Well, I'm going to be 62 years old. I mean, I've worked a long time, and I've worked with some really, really great, wonderful, inspiring people, just some great people. I've also worked with some really, really bad people.
Yeah.
I've had some great jobs and I've had some really bad jobs, right? Like all of us. And it just became increasingly apparent to me that everybody has a choice, right? How you want to go through the world. And I mean, I just over time decided I wanted to go through the world the way I am, you know, trying to have a positive impact on things and trying to share the little bit I know and making a contribution. I mean, you know, we're all influenced by the people around us, right? Jim Rohn, the famous speaker, and said, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, right? So you have to kind of pick and choose who you want to spend time with. I was lucky. I had great parents and good friends, but you know, you get out in the world and it kicks you around, and you learn a lot, right? You learn what's good and you learn what's bad, and then you make your own decisions about who you want to be. There's a great quote by Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of the transcendentalists, and he said, "The only person you are destined to become is the person you decide to be." So, you know, I've always loved Emerson and Thoreau. I remember talking about school as a kid. I remember being in grade school and a teacher introduced me to Thoreau, and it really hit me, you know. So ever since then, I've been, you know, reading it. And so you just have to decide, what kind of person do you want to be? You know, who do you want to be? And then start acting and educating yourself to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. I think it's, I don't know if this is just because of the byproduct of my age, but I hear what you're saying. I mean, you get a certain amount of life stink on you, and the wisdom starts to come in, obviously, through experience and through age, and you feel like you need to give back something. I think in large part, that's why I do this show, too. It's helped me.
Yeah.
I mean, the show is probably, I think, I say this all the time, like, who's, you know, all these talking to 400 people has had an impact on me, probably benefited me more,
of course,
than it has the listeners of this show. And it's in large part why I do it, because I'm continuing to learn and continuing to improve. And I'm sure you're the same way, right? And you're 60, approaching 62. You're probably every year you're like, I there's so much I don't know, right? I mean, as I get older, I realize how much I don't know, right?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. And you know, that's the other thing to point out. There are so many resources to learn, right? There's books, there's podcasts, there's YouTube, so there's Udemy, you know, all those online courses, Udacity and Coursera. And some of the stuff is like $8, $10 for a 6-hour course taught by a professor. I mean, there's no excuse for not continually improving, right? There's a million books in the library, and they're all free. You know, my library lets you take out 50 books at one time, if you can imagine that.
I mean, it's amazing when you think about it. I saw Penn Jillette, you know, the illusionist magician.
I write about them in the book.
Yeah. And he talked about, I listened to him talking to Joe Rogan on a podcast. And, you know, it's so easy to look and go, man, thing. And it is weird. In one dichotomy, there's the information flow is so abundant and so overflowing, but yet we seem to be getting dumber in a lot of sense. But then Penn Jillette said, well, think about this, though. He goes, you could pick up a New York Times newspaper or read it online and one article about genetic coding and genetic engineering, and you could learn more in that one article than someone in the 16th century would ever learn in an entire lifetime, you know? And it's true when you think about it, right? The knowledge that you would get from that one article, you know, surpasses a lifetime of knowledge of the average, you know, 35-year-old in the 1400s.
It's amazing. And if you're not interested in genetic engineering, you're interested in something else. So go find that and go read and learn about it, right? But that's... And it's habitual, right? Once you get started and you find something that resonates with you, something you're interested in, you want more of it, right? I think it's important just to get started, find what you like. It could be painting. I mean, it could be, who knows what it is, right? It could be running. It could be, but find it and learn more about it and practice it.
Well, and I think the big challenge, you talk a lot about this, and I know it's in learning from the, And that's one of the great things about learning from people who have done it. There's still that moment of taking that first leap. I mean, it can be so overwhelming as where you're sitting, you're looking at your situation and where you want to go or what you want to do or whatever idea you want to put forth into creation. The chasm can seem so vast. And so that just in itself typically produces a tremendous amount of stagnation.
Right? Yeah.
And so how do you take that? What do you do? What do you suggest? I mean, you've learned a lot. You see from a lot of these people and even yourself. How do you take that first leap?
We'd mentioned the term superpower earlier. So I think everybody truly, and actually this is, I think, one of the chapters in the book, but I jokingly call it a superpower, but it's really the way it is. I mean, everybody's got a superpower, right? And, and the superpower is the power of how small micro improvements add up over time.
Yeah, the compounding effect of it, for sure.
I mean, it's amazing, right? So I always think of using a carton of blueberries as an example. And I imagine having 100 blueberries in there, right, in a carton, and having another one right next to it with 101. And you would not tell the difference. I mean, you just couldn't tell. Your eye wouldn't even pick it up, right?
Right.
But if you, and that's just 1%, but if you change by 1% a day, which again is inconsequential, you can't even tell the difference. In just 1 year, you will have 100 cartons of blueberries starting from that one, just by adding one more blueberry, you know, the very next day, right? 1%. You keep adding 1%, it'll be 3,700 cartons in a year. So that is a superpower. So yeah, if you stand at the beginning and you think, man, there's no way I can do all this. And that's true. You can't get there instantly, right? But I mean, and in many ways, the world is in conspiracy against us because it holds out these goals and we want to be instantly gratified, but you can't get instant gratification. I mean, you can't get there from here in a day, right? It takes years and years.
Well, that's the key, right? I think, and it's not the, and what I've found is that you just start, I'm a big fan of Stephen Pressfield, and he talks about, I don't know if you've ever read any of his stuff, but.
I've read all his books.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, when he talks about, the war of art, same thing. Right. It's like you just, the resistance, and particularly if it's so important to you, whatever you're trying to believe and achieve is so important to you. The angels, the muse, the universe has put this on your heart, and I love how he says you're shaming the universe if you don't do it.
Right. Right.
But it will try to stop you. And to me, that was eye-opening because, you mean those dragons are always going to be there? Yeah.
Right.
So, okay, right. Well, let's stop worrying about dragons and let's just start focus on becoming a really good dragon slayer. And,
and
the professional knows that they're always going to be there.
Right. And that stuff's also echoed in his book, which is a wonderful book, Turning Pro.
Yeah, Turning Pro. Yep. Yep.
Another wonderful book. Right. So, yeah, it's always going to be difficult. It's always going to be work. There's always going to be setbacks, and it always begins with the first step, right? And the next day you'll look back, and you won't be your destination will not look any closer than when you started, and you'll probably likely have a lot of scratches on you from your first day of trekking and work. But keep at it because you'll get there, right? And it goes back to the other right thing that Steve Jobs popularized, and it's been said many, many times before him, but the journey is the reward, right? So,
well, that's what I was going to get to is that as you start doing it, you realize that initially when you were at station zero and looking at what you wanted to accomplish, when you start getting into it and you start, it's kind of like you and I were talking about running, and I know you're an avid runner. And I was talking about how at the pre-recording, the 6 week window for me, once I got past 6 weeks, then it became like an addiction. And so it's almost like when you start doing it and you start to enjoy the journey, it becomes less about the destination. You just enjoy the process of what's going on. That happens in almost everything that I've done too, is like, I just start doing it, starts compounding. And then a year and a half later, I realize I crossed the initial threshold that seemed so far away, and it was almost like a non-event. Does that make sense?
That's what's wonderfully said. And let me apply that to work, right? And to people's careers. The technology luminary, Kevin Kelly, who's just a great guy, founder of Wired Magazine and someone that I quite like. And he said, we will all be newbies forever, right? So you realize at some point that you're never going to get there wherever there is. You're really never going to get there. And it really is about enjoying the journey. And you will always be working. You will always be struggling. And you'll always be a newbie, meaning you'll always be learning new things. You'll always have discomfort. You'll always be making mistakes, right? But that's life.
Yeah.
And embrace it and enjoy it, because that's what it's like to live and to grow.
Yeah, that's what, you know, I was talking about, even that teacher that I had, that mentor that passed away, teaching me how, you know, helping with my speeches. She talked about that. And she told me, she was the first person that told me that the fear and uncertainty never goes away. And she said it with this beaming smile. And I remember I was getting ready to go on stage. And yeah. She goes, how do you feel? She goes, you feel nervous? And my initial instinct was, no, I got this covered. And she goes, you're nervous, right? And I'm like, yeah, fucking about to puke. She's like, she got this big smile on her face. She goes, doesn't it feel great to feel alive? That's what she said right before I went on stage. But it's true, right? I mean, it's kind of like Henry Fonda used to puke before, you know, up until his last performances. He'd go on stage or start a scene, he'd throw up, right? Because it was so important to him.
Yeah. Well, we all get better with, and that's what this is about, right? That's what the leadership is, your podcast is about. And much of what we talked about today has been really leading yourself, right? So just get comfortable with being uncomfortable, and continue moving forward, taking one step at a time, and.
Yeah, I like how you said, you know, getting comfortable being uncomfortable. We've broached this theme a lot on the show, and it's kind of been an aha moment for me over the last 10 years. Is like, that's just the part of the process, right? That's the price of admission, I like to say, towards significance, right? Is that constant gnawing or that fear and uncertainty is actually a blessing and a gift. It's like even Pressfield talks about, that's the barometer of probably what you should be focusing on. If you're feeling that, you know you're probably heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I just watched a documentary on I forget, it might have been Netflix, but it was on Clive Davis, the record producer who is responsible for just introducing to the world so many brilliant artists. Yeah, from Janis Joplin, Springsteen, and Whitney Houston. I mean, just truly countless people. I mean, Kenny G, even people outside of what would be a typical genre. And he is driven, and this is a gentleman who is profoundly wealthy, and he is in his mid-80s, if not a little older by now, and he is still in the studio at 1 and 2 in the morning overseeing how things are being mixed. And he is driven, he says, really by fear, because he knows how short life is, and he knows how you know it can be very tentative, and things can be taken away. So he always just wants to put the work in, and he always wants to prove himself, right? And in a sense, to me, it made me think he always sees himself as, you know, a newbie. He's always out there trying to discover the next talent, the next genre. And that's just a great way to live. I want to just mention one thing in closing here. I know we're probably going to have to wrap it up, but I had the privilege of working for a gentleman who started a business when he was 55 years old. And he worked very, very hard to grow this business. And it was very, very slow growing for a while, for many, many years, you know, for decades. But eventually it was very successful. And he was worth a lot of money. He was in his mid 80s, but he had the vibrancy of, I don't know, of someone in their 20s. And we used to, he had a private jet and we'd fly to different meetings here and there. And sometimes we'd fly, not on a private jet, but we'd have to fly commercially over to the Middle East or India or somewhere. And we'd be there with just packed with meetings. And we'd come back after a few days and we'd land in New York at, I don't know, it might've been like 4 a.m. or something. And it's just a long, long trip. And, you know, I was exhausted. He would go home and shower and be the first person in the office. He was chairman of the company.
Right.
He'd be the first person in his office sitting at his desk at 6 a.m. after being up for, you know, 17, 18 hours and as happy as ever.
Right.
And that is a great example of how I want to be. I don't really believe in retiring. You know, I don't really want to retire. It doesn't mean I won't want to maybe do something different, but I'll always want to keep working. And I hope I will always be curious. And I hope I will always have a beginner's mind. And I hope I'll always be learning. And that was certainly the example that I saw with this gentleman who is the chairman of this company. He's since passed away. He lived to be into his late 80s, very successful. And he worked up until his very last days. Not to say that he didn't enjoy life and have a wonderful family. He truly lived life, but he was always making a contribution. And I feel fortunate to have worked for him. And by the way, he was a very demanding, tough person to work for. But I learned a lot from that, too.
I love it when you come across. I love when you come across those types of examples, and I've had a few of those myself, and someone that is truly living life because of their insatiable curiosity, their optimism, their positivity. Demanding, but at the same time, it's demanding for a reason. It's not demanding for an ego. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I love how I'm with you. You said something really resonated. I mean, I think that's where, particularly as I've entered my 50s, I'm 10 years behind you, but this show has kind of shown in me that, wow, if there's any fear or regret that I have, it's the fear of regret, right? Regretting that I didn't try this, or I didn't, you know, follow that curiosity path, right? If something is making me curious, that go see where that leads you, right? And just keep trying things and keep doing things. But most importantly, keep contributing, right? Keep adding value to the universe, to the planet. And I think that's what's driving me, and not for ego, but just because it feels like I'm running out of and we are. I mean, and that's it. I'm running out of time. Right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know how long I'm going to be here, right?
We are. And listen, and it goes back to what we said about, keep contributing. And that goes back to the conversation we had about just being kind and considerate with your comments, because you never know how they're going to impact somebody. My dad, who is going to be 88 years old, he lives with us. He's a great guy. Love him. He was actually the best man at my wedding 37 some years ago. A great guy. My mom, passed away a number of decades ago after a long battle with cancer. My dad lives with us now, as I said. But it's funny because he's a great guy. But it's like living with the ghost. Jokingly, I say it's like living with the ghost of Christmas future. Christmas future. because you know, as much as you love your parents, right? You don't necessarily want to be exactly like them.
Right.
So. So it's a good reminder. And it's funny because I can think back about things that just happened a little while ago. It seems, but in reality, they were, say, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So in that short amount of time going ahead, I will be my dad's age.
I know. I do that all the time.
Right.
And it's humbling. So, yeah. Very humbling.
So back to your point, Richard, life is short. You know, get after it, live it, make positive contributions, you know, and keep learning. Right. And by the way, you don't need to have worked for a guy like I did to have that benefit. You can read about people.
Oh, there's
you
plenty, know, of and just apply. Plenty of yeah. examples. So, well, yeah. I know we didn't talk a lot about your book, but that is a great plug for your book because it is chock full of those real life examples, those real life stories. I love lists. I mean, in every chapter's got, here's the top 10 things that this person thinks about this or how to improve. I mean, it's not a linear textbook. It's like almost a book I can just pull up and I'm like, I need to get a little bit of inspiration. I can find something somewhere.
Well, I'm very fortunate. I had a friend, someone I admired more than I could say. And I love this person. It's John Sculley from, the businessman and entrepreneur and investor, formerly head of Apple and PepsiCo and many other companies, but he wrote the foreword for me. And it's very kind, what he said, but he did say that he loves the book. He said, you know, many books end up being on a bookshelf, but Evolve or Die should be very near where you work. He said, I keep going back to it. I love to randomly open it up to any page and read a few pages, often several times a week. It's a fun experience and very stimulating for anyone with big curiosity. And John is a person with big curiosity. He has championed the emergence of a great many technologies that have changed and transformed our world for the better. So he's another person that we can all look up to as someone who's set an example of how to live and how to contribute.
Well, I agree with what Mr. Sculley said. I mean, it's one of those, and I'm an insatiably curious guy. I've always have been. And it is one of those books. I can see that. I'm like, oh, I'm curious. I just kept wanting to go find more and dig. And I think it's a great book. And it's a great, you know, Evolve or Die is the name of the book. We'll have links to that and how you can find that on this post. Tom, you said that you had in the beginning that you were at an offer, particularly for these listeners.
And by the way, Richard, I really enjoy Dose of Leadership. I mean, I've been listening to it for some time. I listen to it while I run. So thank you very much for all the work you do. I guess you've had, several hundred podcasts.
I've had over 400 conversations, not all were Dose of Leadership. I've had some. I had another podcast for a while too that kind of an offshoot or a sub podcast, but yeah, it's amazing that I've had 400 conversations. And thank you for the kind words. I'll send you the check in the mail after we get off here.
No, I love it. I should send you the check because I tell you, you have kept me company. I feel like I know you actually quite well. And I certainly learned a lot about your guests and learned a lot from them. But again, I listen to it when I'm running all the time. Actually, you might have tripped me up on the trail a couple times. You might be responsible for a couple of my.
Well, I hold no no liability. There was any injury that you may occur from listening to my show.
Yeah, or it could have just been my my terrible running form or something. Hey, so if anyone is interested, I have a manifesto really on innovation and creativity, and it's called You Are Being Called. And it originated because people, at least I and some of my friends, like we feel this slight, very subtle bit of angst or anxiousness in the world, right? And what we come to realize is that that's really the world's way, the universe's way of sort of inviting us to step up and make a mark to become more. So I wrote a manifesto. It's called A Call to Innovate. It's 52 pages. It's honestly mostly just really beautiful pictures and some text. And I'll give that to everybody for free. It's a really nice PDF that people can have. And I also have another book that I'll give them, a real book by a famous author. I don't want to mention it, but believe me, it's someone actually we mentioned on our podcast. I have permission to give the folks. So I'll include that. I'll send it out like a couple weeks down the road. But if they subscribe, all they do is just text the word evolve, E-V-O-L-V-E. And I know I'm spelling that right because I'm reading it from the cover of the book. But so just text evolve to 444-999.
That's easy to remember. Text evolve to 444-999.
Yeah, and then they'll get that 52-page manifesto, the call to innovate, emailed to them. And then they'll also get this major book by this major author for free also.
Man, what a generous offer. I didn't have anybody give anything quite that valuable for free. So I appreciate that, Tom. And I guess tell people how they can connect with you on your website.
Yeah, well, my name is pretty easy to remember, Tom Triumph, and just tomtriumph.com. I love hearing from folks, and I'm happy to engage with anybody that wants to reach out. Once again, thank you, Richard, for the effort in putting these on. And I do want to thank the listener for listening. I am someone who has had a lot of different jobs and, I've had some successes and some, and quite a few struggles too. So I understand, what folks are living out there trying to make the world a better place.
So. Well, I'd love to have you back. We barely scratched the surface. You're right. Your life is fully rich. We didn't even talk about all the things that you have done. I didn't get into really your past. We talked about a lot of the concepts that are near and dear to my heart and to my listeners on this show. I hope people do check you out, Tom. I mean, I'll have links to your very inspiring TED Talk on this post. You can go directly to doseofleadership.com and look up Tom's episode, links to his website, a link to and instructions for the text to evolve 444-999. All of that will be on there. I do think you're one of the good ones, Tom. You're one of those that makes all of us think about our life, our career, how to be the best and everything that we do. And yeah. I duly appreciate what you're doing for the universe, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
And if anybody wants to just go check out the TEDx talk, it's titled The Innovation of You.
Yeah, The Innovation of You.
Don't skip ahead, but there's a surprise guest who joins me the last couple minutes on stage. But you let it build. Don't skip ahead.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, TEDx, The Innovation of You.
And I'll have that on there as well on my website. So I'll have that links to all of that. If you go to Dose of Leadership as well. So, Tom, again, one of the good ones. Thanks for coming on the show.
All right, man. Peace to you, and thank you. All right, brother.
Goodbye. Hey, thanks for listening to this special entrepreneur series of Dose of Leadership brought to you by Equity Bank. A special episode, a great one to kick off 2020. Tom Triumph was just fascinating. He's outstanding, and he's so generous. Again, you can get a 52-page, four-color ebook from Tom Triumph. It's called The Call to Innovate. It's $10 on Amazon. You can text EVOLVE to 444-999 and receive this free 52-page, four-color ebook. It's outstanding. What a great gift. And you get a bonus book by one of my favorite authors. If you're really interested, you're not going to be disappointed. Text EVOLVE to 444-999 and receive these two generous bonus gifts from this great, outstanding guest, Tom Triumph. Thanks for tuning to Dose of Leadership. Find out more at doseofleadership.com. Reach out to me if you're looking for a speaker, a coach, or any type of leadership training. I'd be more than happy to talk to all of you. Again, thanks so much for tuning in to Dose of Leadership.